Hi, I just wanted to introduce everyone to our new podcast co-host, John Rankin. I've known John since way back in 2008. Back in those days, John was a 354 miler and 335 1500 meter runner, times which remain his PBs today. John won the 1500 meters at the 2001 USA Junior National Champs, and later in his career, he won the 2007 Emsley Carmile, clocking his 354 PB. John is an awesome guy who understands running like few do, and who has a deep reach when it comes to contacts within the running world. I hope you enjoy some of John's chats.
When it comes to the sport of running, every sprint, every breath, and every challenge is a testament to the resilience and spirit of an athlete. Today on the Runner's Tribe podcast, I dive into the remarkable journey of a good friend of mine, Will Lear, a professional middle distance runner from America who is known for his dedication and achievements on the track. As a two-time indoor national champion in 2013, a world relay silver medalist in 2014, and a top eight finisher in the men's 1500 meters at the World Indoor Championships in 2014, Will's career epitomizes the relentless pursuit of excellence. But there's so much more to Will than just his accolades. Beyond the track, he has embraced new passions, finding as much joy in the tranquility of nature as in the adrenaline of competing. This conversation isn't just about running. It's a deeper exploration of life after the finish line. It's also an exploration of the pursuit of new challenges and the enduring spirit that defines a true athlete. Join me as I uncover the layers of Will Lear's journey, from the peaks of his racing career to the new adventures that keep the essence of his athletic spirit alive. Lace up for an inspiring episode that goes beyond the track, right here on the Runner's Tribe podcast.
Before we jump into it, a quick word from the sponsors of this week's episode. ASICS has just released the new Gel Nimbus 26. With cloud-like cushioning and soft grip, it delivers unmatched comfort. The new Gel Nimbus 26 shoe is ASICS' most comfortable shoe yet. Now available by ASICS.com and specialty running stores. This podcast is also brought to you by Tarkine Athletics. Tarkine is the world's most eco-friendly, high-performance running shoe and apparel brand. Tarkine's well-known trail shoe, the Trail Devil, is donned by many of Australia's best trail runners, and Tarkine is dropping three new models of shoes during 2024, including a maximalist road shoe, set to drop in July, that possesses arguably the most plush foam on the market. Get behind this young brand as they take on the giants of the shoe industry. Visit them at tarkine.com.
Dude, I'm doing pretty good, man. How are you?
I am doing great. Just getting back from a morning of skiing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Tell me about that, dude. I don't even ski at all, man. I've never even tried it.
Lost you for a second.
Oh, can you hear me okay?
Yep, I got you now.
Yeah, tell me about your morning, man. You were out skiing?
I always have these grand aspirations at the beginning of winter to sort of have like, I don't know, one or two ski trips a year planned. Skiing's like my first love. Running's great, but skiing is my first love. And I had to give it up for like 15 years when I was running in college and professionally, 17 years. And so in retirement, I've really found myself enjoying getting back on the slopes.
Man, that's so cool. It's so funny because when I've, you know, having stopped really competing, I've been trying to figure out what would be the next love for me. And it's funny to say this because, I mean, it's easy to get caught up in the hype of the story and the inspiration. But when I saw Alex Honnold doing what he was doing, I was like, man, it'd be kind of cool to get into the sport. I'm not trying to even do anything remotely close to what he's doing, but the idea of the mental and physical challenge of like rock climbing and getting into the sport, that appealed to me more than anything else. So I kind of do a little bit of that now, not as much as I'd like, but nothing else has kind of come close to running for me in terms of just how it makes me feel and how hard it is for me to do it. You know, in terms of, I like the challenge of
doing it, especially the longer runs, the more intense workouts. I miss that, but I don't miss doing it, but I miss the feeling of what it does for me.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, yeah, like down going to a resort and downhill skiing is by no stretch of the imagination, like it can be very hard, but for the most part, you're just kind of like, you know, someone or something ushers you to the top of the mountain and you ski down. And like, so the hard part's taken care of by machines, which is great. But what that also means is that, like, you know, for the most part, I have to find other ways to get an actual workout.
Yeah. Well, where does running fit into your life now? I mean, I'm actually really curious. I apologize. I don't know why, but the way I was looking at your Instagram and the post, I was like, man, he looks like a coach. He has this coach vibe. And I assumed that you're still around, you know, the sport so much that I said, maybe he's working with athletes and stuff like that. So where does running fit in your life right now?
You know, I thought when I retired from running that there was like a decent shot that I would never go on a run again.
Yeah.
And I was just really over it. My body was over it. Mentally, it was just, you know, it's frustrating when you put so much time, effort, energy into something, and then like you're not getting the results back that you once did. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, you know, I'm gonna play ultimate frisbee. I'm gonna, you know, rock climb. I'm gonna ski. I bought a bike. I was doing all these things, and then I'm like, but probably 6 weeks after I decided I was gonna, I retired. I guess I'm lucky. It was a decision. It wasn't really like a catastrophic injury or something like that. I found myself like gravitating towards my running shoes and really wanting to go for a run. And so that made me happy because, like, you know, running is such a big part of my life. It's such a big part of who I am. Still, obviously, a fantastic workout. But more than anything for me, it's like a social outlet. I don't think there's any better way in the world to connect or reconnect with a friend than going on a run.
That's probably the thing that I miss the most because I'm a family guy, man. I got, you know, a kid and two step kids and, you know, obviously been with my girlfriend for 14, 15 years. I mean, just into that family life. And I try to get out of it. I'll be honest with you, man. I tried to get out of running because I felt like that was all that I knew about myself. That was like who I am completely. And so I'm like, who am I without the sport, you know? And so I stepped away from it and pursued writing. And I mean, obviously, everybody's a content creator nowadays and can say they do marketing and stuff like that. But I love storytelling, man. I love telling stories, which is why I love doing the podcast conversations. I love connecting with amazing people like yourself and just people that are interesting to me that really do live, I think, life to the fullest. And I love extracting those stories and lessons from those stories. And so I pursued that craft heavily. That was what I studied in college. And I'm like, man, I just want to tell stories. And I want to get really good at that. You know, I have all my heroes in the world of writing. And I'm like, I want to be like these guys. You know, so I'm switching from, you know, people like Prefontaine or Michael Johnson or whatever. And I'm like, okay, I want to have other heroes and I want to pursue these other this other thing that I've always been passionate about. But it's funny, the last, and I'm not gonna lie, it's been like probably a good 10 years or so since I've really like wanted to get into running again. But I'm back in it, man. And I'm like, and that
it has a way, right? It brings you back.
Yeah, but you know what's weird is that I'm like, it's never gone away from me in terms of like, I wish I was out there still kicking some of these guys' butt.
I absolutely do not. You are unique in this conversation and that endeavor.
I think more than me, Will. I gotta be honest with you, man. I was like just double checking. I'm like, let me see about all the stuff that Will did. And I'm like, man, dude, you crushed it, man. Like, I'm very, very amazed at like how much you accomplished. And it was always just fun watching you compete, man. But I feel like I got so close to like finally kind of like, I think, breaking through as a professional runner. And then I was diagnosed with my kidney disease. And mentally, that was it for me. The moment that happened, I'm like, what else should I be doing with my life? Because what if this is it? Like, what if I'm going to be on dialysis and I can't race anymore? Or I don't take better care of myself or fight this disease. And that was right after the Olympic trials in 2008. And I'm like, I felt the mental shift. Like, I don't think I can dedicate the same energy and time and effort to the sport. So I felt like what I started to do and even tried to continue to do after that diagnosis, it just was never the same, you know? And so I still feel like maybe I have some unfinished business. I'm assuming you don't feel that way though.
No, it's funny. One of the prompts that you sent me had to do with G technology.
Yeah.
And, yeah. You know, what do I think about that? I think it's made an enormous difference in the sport.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's leveled the playing field in a large degree and taken away some of the physical attributes that made people good runners.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think it's like made things really exciting. And so I try and not project my own experience onto what people are doing today,
yeah.
Knowing that like I'm 38, I'm about to be 39.
Yes,
there's absolutely zero chance in hell I'm stepping back on the track. I'm going to compete with Hobbs Kessler and Cole Hawker and, Ollie Hoare and
yeah.
All these guys and Jordy Beamish, like who are absolutely exceptional athletes,
man.
And so like I don't want to say like I've resigned myself to being a fan, but this is a really fun time to be a fan of track and field.
I agree with you, actually, and I wanted to talk to you about that because I'm like I just saw this Instagram post. I follow Michael Johnson, who was honestly the reason why I even got into the sport in the first place. It was 1996, watching him compete in the Summer Olympics in Atlanta, Georgia, and I was like a basketball player, and I was getting ready to go in high school, and I saw Michael, and so whenever I still follow him to this day because he was a hero of mine, and again, he's the reason why I got into the sport. But I'm interested in what you think about the state of the sport, because I don't feel like, even though a lot of people in the sport talk about, oh, it's broken in a lot of ways, it's not enough publicity, it's not as big as it should be in the U.S., for example. But it's funny, man. I'm like, damn, I don't know if there's ever been a better time for this sport because of, thank God for social media, really. There's so many people that are into the sport, that follow the athletes, to support the athletes in a lot of ways, and that like never before. And I'm stoked. I actually feel even more excited to watch the sport than ever before with where it's at.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think it's really interesting time to ingest media from a sport where like the athletes have such a powerful voice in telling their own story.
Mm-hmm.
Because we aren't getting that ESPN 30 for 30. We're not NBA players that are out there playing 89 games a year, and every single game we get to hear about. I'm a big Denver Nuggets fan. And so like every nice. Game we hear about, you hear those same stories, but they're sort of crafted by the, you know, greater, larger media as to like what they think is resonating with the fan or what the fan wants to hear versus like what the athlete wants to tell.
Yeah.
And so I'm a big fan of what I don't want to like attribute it necessarily to the meeting on athletics club athletes, but what Morgan, Ollie, and George have done with the Coffee Club podcast, because while they do all train for the same group and run for the same sponsor and have the same coach and all this stuff, like their podcast is like completely separate of that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like they talk about their experience and their workouts and all that stuff. That's what kind of what people want to know. But then it's also just like, you want to hear that banter of three guys who are at the top of their game and are, you know, just like also fans of the sport. Because like at the end of the day, I think it's like when people react adversely to, I don't know, like an NBA player giving dap to another guy that just like does something incredible. Mm-hmm. It's like, why aren't they competing against each other? Why don't they hate each other? It's like, because at the same time, like all of us are, even while we were competing, we are fans of the sport that we're competing in. We're like constantly impressed by what other people are doing in the space.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it's like hearing those guys talk about that, tell their story, Josh Kerr and David Ribich doing it on the Sit and Kick podcast. I mean, like, it's just like, it's so fun to be able to see this other side of what the athletes are.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I actually enjoy this. Like I mentioned before, I think the story is everything, honestly. You know, it's one thing to see the numbers and the stats and the PBs and all that good stuff, and it's great to see people run fast, but that doesn't make people care about you know, the athlete of the sport. It's how the heck did they get there? That's what people really want to know. That's what we all want to know. It's like, well, okay, what are you doing? You know, what's the story behind that performance? And then that's the stuff that makes you appreciate everything else that you see, on the track, right? And so I don't know. I mean, I'm like, for example, the Engelbrigtsen brothers. Like, I mean, I don't see any of the stuff that they're doing in Norway, but I mean, you hear about all the coverage and from, you know, like these series that they have and this documentary that's coming out. And I'm like, why do people want to see all this stuff? It's because they want to know the story behind all these amazing performances and what's going on. How has this family had produced these amazing runners? And it's all about the story. So the conversations to me are everything, really. It's what makes the sport that much more fun, you know, and enjoyable.
Yeah, I think that you hit something on the head earlier, which is like, as much as people want to see someone run fast, like, you probably know this from your own experience. I know this from my experience that we were lucky that we ran the mile. Yeah. And someone asked you how fast you were, what your mile PB was. If you said 3:59, you get the same reaction if you said 3:29. It doesn't matter. It's like an otherworldly time, even though, like, if you're really close to the sport, you know that 3:59 is not good anymore and that, like, it takes a 3:54 to qualify for NCAAs. And one of the things that I was actually super pumped about was this year at the U.S. Indoor Championships, it finally took a faster time to qualify for U.S. Indoors than it did NCAAs.
Yeah.
It took a 3:52.5 or 3:52.9 or something like that to qualify for U.S. Indoors, which is very fast. And even though NCAA is just like, you know, all those kids have just taken off on a rocket ship, but it still doesn't matter to the layperson, that person that turns the TV on, that you want to tune into the track meet. Fast is fast. And it's like, and what makes this compelling? I think that's the great unanswered question right now in the sport of track and field is like, how do we make this sport that so many people participate in the high school level, it's the most highly participated in high school sport.
Yeah.
How do we make them care about the professional ranks? And like, my argument now, having worked in the business side for a couple of years, is it just to be entertaining. And like, as much as we care about performance, like the athletes, everything's, you know, got to be perfect conditions. You don't want to go to San Juan Capistrano to run this 10K because it's the only place in the world I can run fast. Or like for us, it used to be Stanford. Everyone wanted to go to Stanford to run the 5K. No American athletes ever wanted to go anywhere else because it wasn't fast.
Yeah.
But it's like, well, who cares?
Yeah.
No, like, who cares?
Yeah.
Like, those stadiums aren't getting packed. There aren't 50,000 people there watching in person. There's not a million people tuning in on television. It's like we operate so much in a silo and that we think that what we're doing is like so powerful and important for the sport, but like it really just isn't. And I think one of the cool things that we have in terms of an ability to experiment, at least in the United States, is LA 28 on the horizon.
Oh,
and if track and field can't become like one of the top five sports, I mean, like, right, we can't compete with the NBA. We're not going to compete with the NFL. NHL, MLB, and then there's soccer. And like, if we can't somehow compete with baseball, which 160 games a year, hard to compete with that.
Yeah.
Soccer is more sort of like in our realm of, you know, how many times a year we would compete. Like, if we can't compete for television time, fan attention, you know, people's Instagram feeds with LA 28 on the horizon, like, I hate to say it, but I'm sort of like, well, track and field is just kind of, it's just a dead sport, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you work in sports marketing, right? At Under Armour. What kind of stuff do you focus on day to day as it relates to, you know, specifically this sport? Is it only running and track and field that you focus on?
Yeah. So my role primarily focused, I was brought in to help make Under Armour competitive in the footwear space.
Okay.
And so I liaised heavily between our innovation team, who like comes out with all our new technologies. Everything that we do is like created in-house. Our inline team, who are the ones that sort of take all those technologies and then package them together in a shoe that can be marketed to the mass public. You know, a shoe that's not going to break down after one race and that's not going to cost $800 to create one pair and that every shoe that we make is at a loss. We're not quite there in the run footwear space yet. Some brands are. Some brands sell their shoes at a loss. We're trying to not do that. And then also with our professional athlete roster and seeing like, you know, what do we have now? What's working? What's not working? And what do you need? And then being able to articulate that to the footwear partners. And so it's really cool that in the last 2.5 years, we've run the New York City Marathon. We've had like two separate athletes break 350 in the mile. We've had a male and a female qualify for the finals of the 1500 at the World Championships. We just had three athletes run the world or the Olympic qualifying standard in the 10K at the 10, which again, as much as I said that, like, who cares? I care deeply. But we have athletes that are performing at the best levels with the best people in the world. And we have footwear that's competitive with, and dare I say, better than anything that's out there on the market. And that was in 2.5 years, which, like, in a product development space is lightning quick.
Yeah, that's actually pretty crazy, especially when you're kind of competing with so many other brands out there that are super well established. It's hard to get to get like your footing, and no pun intended, but like a good placement, you know what I'm saying, amongst those competitors, and then to actually stand out as well, to get people to pay attention. It is tricky to do that, you know?
Yeah. And so what have I been focused on? You know, I've been focused on how do we get a brand like Under Armour visibility? Mm-hmm. How do we sort of change the narrative a little bit of what our brand is, which was, you know, we started as a footwear or a football apparel brand.
Right. Yep.
And like, how do we make it known to the masses that we're serious about running? And it's really hard to do, right? Because, you know, I just listed off a handful of sports that are, you know, leaps and bounds ahead of track and field. You can go, we're probably Under Armour's by 15 deep on the footwear charts in terms of workhorse sales. And it's still funny. Like, I have athletes who are some of the best athletes and best athletes in the world. And yet still people say, oh my gosh, I didn't know Under Armour made running shoes. It's like, that's like, a problem. Yeah. And at the same time, you know, a lot of where my creative headspace goes is, what can I do? What can we do as Under Armour for our athletes to elevate them in the world of athletics?
Yeah.
So how can we feature them on our social media? How can we still put money behind storytelling about who they are as athletes? We've done and if you have the free time, go on YouTube and look up Sharon Lochetti's Under Armour videos. And we sent a whole group of media people over to Kenya when she was preparing for her first and second New York City marathons to capture content about what it's like to, you know, a day in her life. And it's beautiful and it's, you know, well produced, and the story is fantastic. It's just a true underdog story. And you know, we get to sort of be in control of telling that, which is really great. But then, you know, the second question is, how do I get people to watch it? How do I get people to care?
I'll tell you this from this is kind of like the world that I live in, and I work with a lot of brands and telling stories and creating content and trying to reach people. And one of the most interesting things, I'm studying this world all the time of marketing and storytelling and sales, and I go, gosh, like, there's two really big things. Like, it's the performance marketing side of things, where it's like you're trying to get that transactional thing to happen, like buy my product or service. But then there's the other thing that takes a little bit longer, which is that establishing that long-term value with your growing customer base or potential customers. And the long-term value thing, obviously, that leads to, not only does it lead to sales, but it also leads to, you know, the support of the brand for a very long time to come, out beyond the initial transaction. And that's the tricky thing, is kind of being able to tap into both, where we need the sales now, but we also need people to keep buying from us for years to come. And I feel like, even though it takes a little bit longer, if I had to choose one or the other, like, just, hey, here's the shoe, it's out, here are the features, click here to buy it now, versus here's this amazing story of this female marathoner preparing for the upcoming New York City marathon, I mean, I would lean into that and try to do everything I can to market that piece of content and that story. and make it something that's being produced and it's unique to Under Armour and its brand and its the running department, and emphasize that like crazy, you know, because I feel like people, when they care about something, buying is a foregone conclusion for the most part. If they're in the market and you get that story in front of them, it's very hard for them to not consider it. You know what I mean? If not in that moment, down the line, because now they're aware. And that's, I feel like that's the trick, is you got to make them care and you got to make sure that they know that you're,
yeah,
that you exist.
Yeah, right. Love Under Armour's athletes, love Under Armour's product.
Yeah.
It's like in that order.
I honestly believe that.
No. And look, Nike, as we all know, does an incredible job at this.
Yeah.
This team starting years ago with Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
Everyone loved Michael Jordan. They wanted to be like Mike.
Yeah.
Right? What a campaign. And then,
yeah.
And who doesn't love Elliot, but still, like, the people's champion? Everyone loves to watch him run. Everyone, he's like the Tiger Woods of running. It, like, I cheer for him, and he's, you know, runs for a competitor brand. I want Kipchoge to keep running well. Yeah. Every time he steps on the line, you don't know. You don't know if he's got 159 in his legs. Probably not. But shit, he's going to go for it. And it's super exciting to watch him run. And he tells a beautiful story of, you know, no human is limited, and like using this platform of sport to create a better world. It's a really beautiful story. And then obviously it's backed by great prompt. And so it's an easy thing for the consumer to buy into. Well, if Kipchoge likes these and I like Kipchoge, ipso facto, let me go buy these $275 shoes that I maybe don't need. That maybe they're actually going to hurt me in the long run, but I have no idea.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm not an expert in shoes. So, I mean, I know what feels good and what doesn't feel good. And I feel like it's always been like this trial and error, find the shoe that works for me. And once I find it, stick with it, right? But I mean, the carbon plates in the shoes that like makes it have that responsiveness. It's light, but it's still absorbing a lot of the shock. I mean, can you explain any of that? Do you understand any of that? And I mean, that's the part that, to me, I haven't tried any of those really higher tech, high-end shoes, but man, from those I've talked to that have tried it, they're like, yeah, it's night and day. You know, it's so
different. Yeah. So it's not just one thing, right? Mm-hmm. You can't just slap a carbon plate in a Pegasus 32. It's not going to do anything for you.
Yeah.
Only do something, but not a lot. The real secret sauce is in what are called supercritical foams. And these are super energy reactive, lightweight foams that, you know, when they don't have a lot of stability to them. And so that's where the, you know, these carbon fiber plates come in, and they add an element of stability and also a reactivity. If you think of like jumping on a trampoline, if you just jumped on the mesh part in the middle of a trampoline, you're not going to get a whole lot, but it takes that spring plus the bounciness of the fabric in the middle to create this. I just want to call it like a new experience in running. And like these types of shoes, the supercritical shoes, it's all I run in now because it's so fun. Like I put on an old pair of trainers and I'm like, well, this sucks. Like I'm not bouncing along the road. I'm not running around trampolines. Running's really hard. And I think like, man, I used to run all of my miles in like the structure or you know, the Brooks launch when I was running for Brooks, or the first version of the Under Armour Infinite, where I put that shoe on now and I'm like, because I still have them in boxes. I'm like, actually, these are now like cool throwback retro. The kids are wearing these in the middle school down the street from my house. So they got to be cool. But I wouldn't want to go for a run in them. Oh. And the experience is completely different. And so what's interesting and I think is great now is that like the playing field has pretty much been leveled between all the brands. And to the consumer, they get to choose now what they want, because I think these shoes are sort of, you know, razor's edge dialed in for like a particular type of runner. You know, whether you're a heel striker, midfoot, forefoot, whether you're trying to run road 5K, 10K, or whether you want to go marathon, or, you know, they're starting to integrate plates and supercritical foam into trail shoes, which is like, it's really taking off because the technology is applicable everywhere. And You know, I think, again, if I can just put my Under Armour hat on, I think that, you know, we've created one of the greatest shoes in the market that a lot of people don't know about, you know. And we have been doing a pretty cool thing where we just completed a project in Oakland at the Oakland Marathon. It was our fourth iteration of this program where we try and, you know, identify local talent in areas where we have investment in road races. So we've done Baltimore twice, Austin and Oakland, and then find these athletes who are just out there grinding, racing a lot, racing hard, trying to, you know, always get better, which is part of the fun part of running as a sport. Whether you're competing against, you know, yourself or others out there, there's always an opportunity to be better.
Yeah.
And we give them the professional athlete experience. So we, you know, kit them out in our Under Armour Pro race kit. We give them all of our highest technology footwear. We offer them, you know, access. Like, you know, what we're used to as professional athletes, where like if you're at a road race, someone holds your hand and walks you to the front of the start line.
Yeah.
You don't got to stand there for 25 minutes and looking at thinking like, how am I going to go to the bathroom now? It's like, no, there's a bathroom for the pros right here. And so like giving these people this like almost like an executive catered experience, what's like to be a professional athlete. And then saying like, you know, this is what Under Armour, these are the values that Under Armour has put into sport. That's like, we're a performance-oriented brand. We're making all athletes better. We're coming up with performance solutions that you didn't know you needed, but now that you can't live without. And so a lot of these athletes sort of like maybe had experience in, you know, some of this performance from footwear. Maybe they didn't. And then they put these shoes on. And they're like, holy crap, this is incredible. And they go out and run like a huge PB. And like, then we get to celebrate them afterwards. And it's just, it's super fun to like, I don't know, put a smile on a runner's face and just really celebrate the hard work that people are doing, A, through product, and B, through, you know, those other things that were, when we would go run like the Fifth Avenue Mile in New York, how New York Roadrunners treats you when you, from the time that you get off the airplane until the time you get back on your airplane, it's like you're a celebrity.
Oh man, they do. I don't know if anybody does it better than them, the New York Roadrunners. I don't know if anybody does it better than them, man.
Yeah, I mean, and so we were both lucky enough to experience that in our previous professions. And so it's like, that's just what I want. I want people to feel that way. And I want them also to feel that way when they go to underarmour.com. And like, that we're not just here to make money, that we're here to like really give athletes something special, give runners something special.
I honestly love that. I think that that's actually the only way to do it, to be honest with you, because again, we experience a lot of this stuff through somebody else before we experience like a product or a service, right? Somebody's going to like catch our attention with their, you know, name, image, and likeness. And then we're going to be like, oh, let me check that out. I really like this person. They resonate with me. So if you do this with these athletes, first and foremost, how can they endorse something that they haven't even really truly tried, right? But the moment they have that experience, man, and you get behind them and their story and you champion them, you know, on social media through digital, these digital channels, these platforms. But they've already had this experience that's super positive with the product, with doing, performing well in the product. And then this experience that you guys are giving them, this up and coming talent, I think it's actually genius, because you have to have people championing the brand and the product. It can't just be the brand itself doing that. You need validation and social proof, and that's how you do it. And so I think that's a great approach.
Well, really fun.
Yeah. No, it makes me remember when I did compete at the highest level. That's the experiences that made running so fun. At that level, was I'm like, man, I kind of feel like a rock star, especially in Europe. I'm like, oh boy, this is fun, you know?
Yeah.
No, that's awesome, man. One other thing I was hoping we would touch on just a little bit is, you know, as fans of the sport, I'd love to talk about some of these performances and stuff that we're seeing from, you know, on the male and female side. I don't know about you, but man, well, I am kind of shocked at like how fast everybody is running. But who stands out to you that you're like, man, this is just, these are some of the best athletes right now to watch, and they're super entertaining, and I'm excited to see how far they can take things. Who stands out for you right now?
So there's a couple. On the guy side, I have to say that I have a huge amount of bias, and I'll try and not let my Under Armour and Ron Warhurst protege bias take too many of my the people that I'm going to mention here. But I think Hobbs Kessler is one of the most intriguing storylines in all of professional running right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, running 334, the Olympic standard in 2021 as a young high school senior. I think he was 17 years old when he ran that time, yeah. Breaking Alan Webb's high school record by like 4 seconds. And Ron, one of the incredible things about Ron as a coach is that he wouldn't be mad if I said this. He's old. He turned 80 this last year.
Amazing.
But he's still learning. And I think that's one of like the hallmarks of a really fantastic coach, is someone who can say like, all right, here's what I've done that in the past has made my athletes successful. And he's had, you know, Nick Willis, who's won multiple Olympic medals, Nate Brannon, Kevin Sullivan, all these guys that have gone and done like really incredible things. But with Hobbs, he's like, this is a completely different challenge. It's a completely different puzzle to solve. And they're figuring it out. It took a little bit of time, but they're starting to figure it out. And I think like one of the things I thought was really cool is after the World Indoor Championships this year, where Hobbs came in third, but this kid led like the entire race.
Yeah.
He just turned 21 last week. He's a college junior age, and he's out there leading the World Indoor Championships, running like an absolute veteran, and like getting the admiration and respect from the running community, guys that he races with. It was so fun to see like all these guys afterwards be like, you know what? Yeah, it was awesome that George won that race. We're super pumped for him, but how incredible was it to see Hobbs like just out there running like an absolute boss? And so I thought that was really cool. And so he's still so young, has a lot to learn, a lot that he can improve on. And I think that's like a really incredible thing to be able to watch as like an up and coming star. We see it in other sports, right? Where we're like, we have Wembanyama. We had like, obviously we had LeBron as an 18-year-old entering the league with these really young guys that you got to watch them have really long, fruitful careers. And I think Hobbs is going to be one of those guys. Another on the guy side, I obviously Noah Lyles. The guy is just like, he's just electric.
I mean, something else, man.
He's something else. Yeah. And he understands the showmanship side of sport, which like, there's times where I think for Noah that it's forced.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like it comes incredibly naturally to him, but I think that, you know, he's doing better now than he did before. He doesn't need my approval, but I think that like he's doing better now than he has previously in terms of like, you know, telling his story. And I, you know, every time he does something that harkens back to anime, it just like pulls on my heartstrings for David Torrance, because DT was like such an anime guy. Because it's like, that's who he is. He loves anime. And so like, why does he dye his hair? Why does he do these, like, why does he paint his nails? Why does he do these, you know, boisterous movements at the beginning and at the end of races? Because it's all anime callbacks that like I don't get, but I love that he's doing them. Right, just like it's super fun. And then who else on the women's side? I'm very biased towards American athletes, but and I don't know if that's what you want to focus on. We can focus on American athletes first, and then I can sort of like dip a little bit into some of the other athletes that I keep my eyes on.
Sure. Yeah. We can start with some of the American athletes that stand out, and then international, anybody that stands out international.
Mom Strength. I think Elle St. Pierre is an incredible story and obviously an incredible talent. So it's been really, really exciting to watch her return. And then, and not in like, you know, what's the Sha'Carri line? I'm not back, I'm better. And I think like, ooh, I think
that
that's
goosebumps. That gave me
right? Like that campaign is fantastic. Yeah. But I think Elle St. Pierre going and sort of like stunning the world, beating Gudov Segay, who just broke the women's world 5K world record at pre-classic last year.
I think
that's, you know, she still is a ways off from some of the PRs of Faith Kipyegon, Gudov Segay, these people who are running like near 14 minutes for 5K. But like a performance like that, where you beat that athlete, it's a championship style race. Maybe she'll never run a PR that's that fast, but you know, that's why they run the championship races without rabbits. It's a different game. And, you know, she's clearly starting to believe I don't want to insinuate she lost belief, but she's regaining that confidence in herself to put herself in the positions to freaking win global medals. And that's just so awesome. Also, obviously, Shaqiri is insane. She's so freaking good. And also sort of like Noah, she just like, she, people, when she's on the track, they just like, they get her attention. And so I'm going to take a step back though and say like another area where I'm like, I have a lot of love. And when I go to track meets, I find myself going and sitting by is field events. So men's and women's shot put in America right now is like the best it's ever been. We have Chase Jackson, formerly Chase Ely, who's an absolute superstar. Loggy winning the discus gold last year. I mean, that's going to be a fun rivalry between her and Val Allman that we'll get to watch in real time unfold around the globe and then at our Olympic trials. And then obviously, I mean, Ryan Krauser, watching him warm up, like, I don't know how it would be like if there was a world where when we were in the 1500, if your warm up was like you would just go out on the track and run like a 48 second 400 or like a 46 second 400 and you're a 1500 guy. It's like, that's what Ryan Krauser does in warmups. It's like his warmup throws are further than anyone in the competition will throw, and they're in their best and like their competition phase and doing everything right. And it's like, they just got to sit there and be like, man, what the heck? Like, this is so insane. But awesome to watch. Like, just absolutely awesome to watch. He brings it every competition. He doesn't hold back. He doesn't dodge competition. He's out there like throwing against Tom Walsh, Joe Kovacs, week in and week out. And yeah, I just love it. I mean, yeah, that stuff to me is awesome.
I think that's so cool, man. I mean, and I love that you mentioned other disciplines, not just the running disciplines and athletes and those like the field events. I've always found the athletes in, you know, shot put, discus, hammer, especially. Obviously, I mean, I think that the long jump, high jump is just out of control, you know, watching what they do. But I've always loved the field event athletes, man. I'm like, dude, they really can do just about anything. They're so athletic. And if you don't know, like, man, you have no idea how crazy, like, those athletes are outside of just their discipline. It's actually pretty ridiculous and remarkable.
Yeah, right. We had, again, I went to a D3 school, so maybe not me so much, but at UCLA, I'm sure that you had experiences when you'd be in the weight room and like watch the throwers go to the squat rack and like, you know, put an offensive lineman on the football team to shame, right? Where it's like, people don't think about it that way, where these guys can run a, you know, probably damn near high 4 second 40 and they're 295 pounds. It's like, they're dynamic, ballistic, and not just in their physical capabilities, but also in their personalities, you know? Yeah. And I think that's really fun because the field events too, like you have this opportunity in distance races, you go off and you're out there with, you know, somewhere between 12 and 20 people. It's hard to isolate the camera on like a singular performance. Field runners get every time that they go, it's just them.
Yeah.
And so I think we have some young superstars that are going to come out. Tara Davis Woodhull in the long jump. She's pining for the spotlight and just waiting for the cameras to arrive on her because she's been doing all the right stuff in terms of like crafting her social media presence, a story that she and her husband Hunter tell about their relationship, also their love of track and field and all this stuff. It's like, wholesome is the wrong word, but it's just like, it's just a fantastic feel good story. And she's an insane athlete. And so like you put all those things together, it's like, who doesn't want to watch that? Like everyone wants to watch that.
Yeah. Oh no, I agree with you. Like I said, I think it's the story. It's the stories are what make the biggest difference. And I'm having a lot of fun. Thank goodness for all the social media coverage and everybody share. So many athletes being willing to share so much about their story. I want to throw one at you because you didn't say it yet, but I know once I say the name, you're going to be like, oh yeah, of course. Yared Nuguse.
Yared is fantastic. And like watching him run it's like watching a kid. He just like, he brings so much joy to the track. And like, I don't want to say there's like a lack of expectation on his side, but he doesn't appear to show up to races like, I'm going to run 3:43 today. It's like, oh no, I'm going to just go out there and race as hard as I can. And like, wow, I just surprised the crap out of myself running 3:43. And that was awesome. Like, and so like, again, I think those things are really refreshing to see because it's like, it's a direct compliment, I think, to Jakob Ingebrigtsen, who like, I don't know that I've ever seen him smile.
I think you're right.
So, you know, I
think you're right. I don't think I have either.
Yeah, right? It's like, I like seeing athletes who are obviously insanely talented, but at the same time, like, maybe aren't incredible egomaniacs.
Let's talk quickly about the upcoming Prefontaine Classic and this whole thing that's being built around Ingebrigtsen versus Kerr and to some extent Nuguse as well, but it's really about Ingebrigtsen versus Kerr in this mile, even though Alaus is talking about how excited he is about this head-to-head race. What do you think about that race, and do you have a prediction for the time?
I'm excited, right? Like, hard not to be when you have two guys who are so accomplished, like, willingly stepping on the line together. Just like, all right, I know I'm going through
a lot of luck.
I know. Yeah. Give me 60 seconds and I'll be out of this terrible zone. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Let's do it. I'll give you 60 seconds. It's all good. Yeah.
I'm watching the bars go up in my reception. So hopefully.
As long as you're safe, Will. As long as you're good, I just want you to be safe on the road.
Oh. This 2005 Prius basically drives itself. We push big whips out here in Colorado.
Hey, come on now.
Yeah. Okay. So Prefontaine Classic. I think it's a really intriguing storyline, namely because Jakob hasn't raced, and yet the guy is still like so in love with himself that he can't not go to the Norwegian media and like talk a big game. Now. Yeah. I think one of two things will happen. I think he's going to show up and be fit and be ready to race, or he's not going to show up.
Yeah.
And if he doesn't show up, I think Yared versus Josh Kerr is equally as enticing of a scenario because Josh isn't afraid to go at the pace. And if he and his coach Danny Mackey request something, then like he's just going to go with it. And he doesn't care if he has to take it the last 800. He's such a tough athlete that like 800 meters to go, great, come with me. And Yar is just like, he's just such a competitor. And I don't know what goes on between the ears of Yared, but his like ability to turn off anything, you know, like we have these demons that say like, slow down, don't do that. That's going to hurt so bad. You're going to blow up. I don't think he has any of those.
I agree with you. And so, I agree with you. I had to stop you and say, I'm looking at this dude and I'm like, yo, like,
yeah,
what
right?
is going on in your head? Because, wow, you can't be doing what this dude is doing. And it doesn't, like, there's no words to describe how absolutely stunning it is to watch what this guy's doing.
Exactly. And so, like, even if the sights are set on, you know, Josh and Jakob, I wouldn't be shocked if Yared wins that race.
No, neither would I. And anybody that is not paying attention to this kid.
Yeah. So I think Yared's incredible. Why did he not come when I you know mentioned stars to watch? It's just merely because I don't know. I feel like I'm waiting for him to differentiate a little bit in terms of the storytelling. what makes you tick, like that, and this might come off badly, but it's like the guy loves to play Mario Kart. And I'm like, that's great. You're not a child anymore. Like, what about you as an adult? Like,
sure. Yeah.
Makes you a different person. Like, as much as I love his like kid approach to sport, like I'm just looking for a little bit more depth there from him as an athlete, because like I just, you know, as we've talked about now sort of at length, I love watching people who are like peak of their craft. I'm just more interested in someone who's really good and also like an intriguing story.
And I love, it's hard not to respect that though, you know, like that perspective, especially as we are, you know, we're mature, we're mature as men of the sport. And it's one of those things where it's like, we're looking for something a little bit different and we have a different perspective and expectation in terms of what we want to see from, you know, the athletes that we're watching and that are coming up. So I agree. And I think you're saying that from a couple of different perspectives. And I think one of the biggest ones is that you're a star in terms of your times, but that doesn't make you a star in terms of standing out amongst your peers. Like, we should be talking about you more, but you're not giving us enough reason to. And unfortunately, the times don't translate without the story in terms of interest.
Right. When there's someone, unless you're the fastest, right?
Unless you're the
fastest or the best that's ever done it, then like, you got to give me something else. And it's a, shoot, man, it's a tough time to be a 1500 meter runner of the world right now, where like,
ooh,
you have guys, you know, so many guys that are running in that like mid to high 320s. It's crazy for me to say, I like trip over my words even just saying that.
I know.
But you know, and like, I think the story with Jakob is like a bit of the story of Ryan Krauser at Indoor Worlds this year. I mean, he has won the Olympics, but he's never won the World Championship 1500. And yet he treats all these guys that have won the World Champs as though they're nothing. And so I think like he's really not doing himself any favors by if I'm any of these guys who have run sub 330 and have an ounce of self-belief, and this guy is out there, it's like, man, I just want to beat you. Like, and I want to beat you resoundingly. And I don't really care about any race other than the championship, that I just want to pummel you because of your lack of respect for like how good all of these other athletes are.
Yeah. Nope. I mean, it's too stacked now, man. I tell you one thing I wouldn't be doing is trying to give people any fuel, because you can't underestimate, anybody's motivation. It is, I don't know. I think running is so funny because it's so mental. And I got to read you a quote that you shared a couple years ago on your Instagram, that I read it and I'm like, dang, this is one of my favorite quotes, running quotes, maybe ever, man. It's so good. But just speaking to running in general, like, dude, if it's in your, if you put something in somebody's head and it's the right thing, you might flip a switch and that person might all of a sudden have a massive breakthrough against you because you made them, you kind of pissed them off, right? And I'm like, man, don't give them any motivation. What did Michael Jordan say all the time in that documentary? I took it personally. And yeah. He wanted to. Give me a reason to get competitive. Well, I know you got to hop off, man, in just a minute here. Oh my gosh, dude, I'm such a fan of yours, man. I just, in so many ways, I think you're such a great steward of the sport and just great person to just chat with, man. And I love you as a runner, man. I think you're just awesome. But I got to share this quote with you real quick and maybe have you leave a question for me to ask the next guest that I get to chat with. Obviously, it's all going to be running conversations here, but before we go, let me read you this quote from you and get your take on it. From a couple years ago, the pursuit of excellence in running in many ways mimics that of life. It's hard, like really hard. It requires a supportive community. It commands dedication. It requires sacrifice. And from time to time, when you feel like you can give no more, a breakthrough occurs. The proverbial light at the end of of that dark tunnel. So keep pushing in life and in running, just not so hard that you break. Ain't no shame in giving something your all, but there's certainly regret in quitting before you find out what your all really is. That was like March of like 2021. You wrote that, man.
Yeah.
That's something else, bro. I'm like, but that makes me appreciate the mental side of the sport. And it also makes me appreciate at 42, because I turned 42 February this year, the journey, man. And as I get older and I look back on the pursuit of greatness in running that I had, and now it's just more everything else in life. That quote really, I think, sums it up so well in terms of just how to have good perspective on everything.
Well, yeah, when you read that to me, I was like, who was I quoting on my Instagram?
the responses you got on that post is fantastic, man. You know, everybody was like feeling that, you know.
Well, I think it's because it's true, right? There's a lot of people that strap on a pair of running shoes and have such a lack of respect for how hard it is. They just think that, you know, you're just a better natural runner than me. And it's like, no, like every time I'm on my way, I'm driving out to the Niwot track to join a friend in a workout right now. But you know, I go out to the Niwot High School track and I see the On Athletics group, I see Team Boss, I see the Tin Man. And these are people who are out here putting in, you know, 80 to 100 miles a week and, you know, two, sometimes three workouts in a long run. And like the discipline that they have for boredom, John, the discipline they have for boredom is unmatched.
Yeah.
It's unmatched because while all the other people who are your age in their mid-20s to mid-30s are going out for happy hour after work, or you know they're having kids and starting that life, like that next step of life, you put a lot of that stuff on the back burner, and you're out there just grinding day in and day out, hoping that when you get to the starting line, that you have it. And like, it's a, and we're talking about a sport where there just really isn't that much money to be made, which is crazy. And so, you know, I have the utmost respect for people that, you know, try and pursue this sport at the highest abilities. And I even have an also high amount of respect for people that just pursue this sport because it's what they want to do. Yeah. And it's one of the great joys of living in a place like Boulder is on the weekends when I go out to join some friends for a run, it's like parking lots are full of cars and bikes of people that are doing the same thing. That they're out there to connect with friends, to be in nature, to push their bodies, to do something hard, because doing hard things really opens up aspects of who we are as people that nothing else does.
Amen. I love it. I love it. Well, that I couldn't agree with you more. I feel like you got to live your life that way. Honestly, you have to constantly challenge yourself. Otherwise, you're just going to, you know, you're not going to be as happy as you can be. I'll tell you that much. Last thing for you, brother. What's one question I should ask the next guest? And again, it's all runners that I'm going to be talking to for the Runners Tribe podcast here. So what's something that you think I could ask that would be interesting or fun to ask somebody else, the next guest?
I think it'd be interesting to ask someone, what race have they never done that they cannot wait to do?
Okay, that's gonna be
and
fun.
You know, like for me it's the New York City Marathon. Someday I'll run the New York City Marathon, and I don't want to run it fast. I want to run it to enjoy it because it's like pinnacle of running culture in America. And you know, it's an event like none other where there's millions of people on the street cheering for you who you've never met. And yeah, I mean, like, look, you and I have run Olympic trials. We've run in some of the biggest stadiums in Europe packed with fans.
Yep.
And like, that's all great. And like, that's a unique experience that sort of requires a certain amount of performance. But like, there's so many other things in running that are awesome.
So awesome. Yeah. I'm so with awesome. You. That's those. It's
did you just see Ben Blankenship ran a 100-mile race last weekend?
What? No.
He ran 100 miles in under 19 hours.
Yeah, the fast stuff is not, don't appeal to me no more, but that's crazy. Are you kidding me right now?
Yeah, what? The guy was seventh place in the 2016 Olympics in Rio, and less than, you know, 8 years later, He's running a 100-mile trail race. Wild. Absolutely wild.
Okay. Well, he's now my new Forrest Gump.
Seriously.
Good for him. Oh my gosh, man. Well, I'm with you, brother. If it's possible, man, at some point, like, you better let me know when you actually do decide to run that New York City Marathon, because that is on my list, man. New York and Boston, I got to do those.
Well, let's line up together. Let's okay. line up together.
Well, you take care, brother. Have a good workout, and I'll be in touch with you, man, but thanks for chatting with me. It's so great to hear from you, man.
Yeah, you too, John. Thank you very much for having me.
All right, brother. We'll catch up soon.
Bye.